Hey, it's Scott Petrick with another episode of the Brown Zone Coverage Podcast. The Browns concluded the NFL draft this weekend with six picks and no trades. They drafted interior lineman, but not an offensive tackle or edge rusher, a receiver, but no tight end or running back, a cornerback, but no quarterback. The final pick from the Deshaun Watson trade was also made by Houston. Here to discuss, as always, is Dave Chudowski of Go, the WKYC Morning News. What's up, Chud?
Scott, hello. Taping it on a Tuesday early this week. And since last time we talked, we've had the draft. The Cavs, man, what a turnaround for them. And the Guardians lose two out of three against Atlanta. Just a quick recap, but it's funny how that works. One minute you're on top of the world, next minute it's like, okay, what's going on here? So Cavs need to bounce back tonight. Weird series, right? I mean, just all four games, blowouts.
Yeah, and I didn't get to watch a ton Saturday. We were in the media room at the draft, but it was
lucky
on. In,
you.
Yeah, right. But it was on in one corner enough to look up and go, "Uh-oh, it's over." Right. So, a huge game tonight, and just the pressure on everybody, right? Because, and I don't think this is hyperbole, Chud. And tell me if I'm wrong. If they lose this series, then everything gets – well, it feels like everything could get blown up. Coaching change, huge roster decisions. If they start losing tonight at home where it's bad and you can tell they're going to lose a game, they could get ugly at that down at Rocket, right? Like, I feel like this fan base is kind of teetering whether or not to turn on them or to embrace them. And it's going to be interesting down there, I think.
Yeah, no, this is – I think that the team that wins tonight probably wins the series. That's not a guarantee, but
sure.
Man, if Orlando finds a way to win tonight, Cavs are done. They're not going down to Orlando and winning. And I think if the Cavs win tonight, they'll probably lose in Orlando and come back and win game seven, but I wouldn't guarantee it. I could see Orlando still sneaking out game seven, but Orlando needs to prove they can win here. Just like the Cavs were terrible down there, Orlando is pretty bad here, but that game Saturday was brutal. Just no heart to come out like that at halftime leading and then have a third quarter like that. But listen, Scott, man, this, and I know this isn't a Cavs podcast, but,
Right.
they basically handpicked, to play the
Right.
Magic. I mean, they could have gotten the second or third seed or tried for it at least, and they knew this is what they wanted. Yeah, I mean, hard to imagine Bickerstaff keeps his job if they blow this series.
Well, especially coming off last year's, right? That home court advantage against the Knicks. Don't make it out of the first round, and then this could happen. I think it could mean significant changes. I mean, you know how Cleveland fans are, right? So you're always waiting for, or plenty of people are waiting for that other shoe to drop. I think there's going to be a lot of anxiety starting, maybe not starting this game tonight, but if something were to go wrong early, right, and Orlando goes on a run or Mitchell struggles, whatever it is, and it doesn't look great from the start, I think you're going to have some jittery fans down there.
Yeah, no question. No question. And in the NBA, you're supposed to progress. You don't make it in the playoff, in the play-in a couple years ago. They made it to the playoffs last year and lost the first round. Now this is – you got to win the first round here and then see what happens next round. But anyway, that's the Cavs. On to the Browns. Quick little news update here today. Greg Newsom.
Yeah, the Browns picked up the fifth-year option on his rookie contract. Obviously, it was expected. Andrew Berry, the GM, wouldn't confirm it when he got asked about it Saturday. That's just his style. He doesn't like to do that publicly. He's never done it before when it comes to the fifth-year options. So Newsom, he's scheduled to make about $2.4 million this year. Then in 2025, the fifth-year option, it jumps to $13.377 million. It's fully guaranteed as soon as they pick up the option. The deadline was Thursday, so they beat the deadline by a couple of days. But it's a premium position, cornerback. Newsom has played well. He started almost every game since he got drafted in the first round, number 26 overall out of Northwestern in 2021. He can play outside. He can play inside. Hasn't been to a Pro Bowl. Hasn't been Pro Bowl caliber yet. But I think he's definitely proven he's a starter in this league. The versatility playing outside and inside is certainly valuable. It's certainly worth the $13.377 million for 2025. It doesn't mean the Browns will keep him. They could trade him at some point. You know, I don't think that's happening this year. I think the window to trade him this year is probably closed, and the Browns are happy to keep him, and you want three outstanding corners, and they feel like they might have the best cornerback group in the league. But that picking up that option guarantees that money and gives the Browns, you know, they know what they have. They know what price he is. If some team wants him next year, and we just talked about the possibility he could be traded, because it's either trade him or you probably have to figure out a long-term extension. And that could happen too. Like, I'm not ruling that out. You just have to figure out how you're going to pay everybody. We know Denzel Ward's already making $20 million a year. Martin Emerson Jr. is coming into his third year in the league. He'll be up for a possible extension. And it feels like they might have to choose between Newsom and Emerson, who they're going to pay big bucks long-term to, which is why there's the discussion around Newsom. But picking up the fifth-year option, no-brainer. That's reasonable money for a starting cornerback in this league. And I think Newsom's certainly proven that he is a starting cornerback in this league.
Yeah, and we just talked about this on a recent pod about how, you know, was it Andrew Berry or Stefanski? I think it was Berry. Talked about how, you know, it's like you have three corners on the field most of the game, right?
Yeah, it was Berry, yeah. In today's NFL, so many three receiver looks that you have to match them with three corners. And, you know, not only is – so he gives – so just a pure number, right, three versus three. And I keep coming back to it, but I really think it's crucial, Chud, is his versatility. He can start outside and move inside, and not a lot of guys can do that. Like, Martin Emerson doesn't do that. Denzel Ward really doesn't do that, go outside to inside. So he provides an element that is rare in this league. Now, nickel corners don't get paid the same as outside corners, right? Because probably your best receivers are on the outside. But it's a highly valuable skill that he has. And one, the Browns obviously are not looking, as Andrew Berry said, to give away.
Yeah. All right, let's get to the draft. No pick in the first round. That's over now. They're finally going to have their first round pick next year. Although Barry joked about, well, we'll see. Barry said something like that, right?
For now,
that's what he said. I'm assuming everyone listening knows all the picks, but the main two are Mike Hall Jr. out of Ohio State in the second round, defensive tackle, Ohio State, and then third round, Zach Zinter, Michigan, guard, and we're going to talk about those two probably the most, and we'll get to them here in a second, but just overall, before we hit each guy, what's your overall thought on the Browns draft?
I had a couple. One, and boring might not be the perfect word, but just a bland kind of draft, right? There were no trades from Andrew Berry, which is unusual. This is his fifth draft as general manager, and he'd made at least a trade in every other draft. No trades this year. So that provides a little bit of excitement. I think fans, if you can move up, you move down, you get picks for next year, whatever it is. You don't have a first-round pick. That diminishes the excitement right there. And then, you know, I think there weren't a whole lot of, quote-unquote, sexy picks, right? You go interior lineman on defense, interior lineman on offense. They did take a receiver. They only took two offensive players, the guards, Exinter, then the receiver out of Louisville, Jamari Thrash. So I think it's just like not a lot of guys to get overly excited. If you're a casual fan, you look at this draft and like, okay, you know, they did get an Ohio State guy, which I think fans love. He's a Northeast Ohio kid, grew up in Garfield, started his high school career at Benedictine, and then his family moved to Streetsboro and he finished at Streetsboro. So there is that connection. I think fans like that and appreciate that. But there just wasn't a lot of buzz to this draft. And we knew that coming in. And then as the draft went on, there's nothing to really change that. And then the other thought I had was, it was about the future. And all drafts, in some regard, are about the future, right? They're rookies. You bring them in. The Browns like to be patient. So on and so forth. But this draft really felt about 2025 and beyond. And that's because, you know, Mike Hall Jr., I don't expect him to start this year. Right? The Browns have a lot of veteran defensive tackles. I think he'll be in the rotation immediately, but I don't think he's going to start right away. He might not even start this year. Zach Zinter, unless there's an injury, he's not going to start this year, right? Because you have Joe Bitonio and Wyatt Teller and Ethan Posick in the interior of the offensive line. So there's a chance that nobody from this draft class starts as a rookie. So it's about succession plans. It's about, okay, in a couple of years, can you see Mike Hall Jr. maybe taking the place of Dalvin Tomlinson on that starting D-line? Yes. In a couple of years, can you see Zinter, replacing whether it's Teller or Bitonio or even Ethan Posick? So it's about the future. And even the Deshaun Watson thing, you mentioned that the last part of that trade, it's now about looking at, hey, the Browns have a first-round pick again in 2025, which they haven't since 2021, right? So I just felt like this draft was about more than 2024, which is different than teams like, you know, New England, for example, is probably going to start Drake May right away, or Washington or Chicago, right? You get your quarterback, you get this receiver, Arizona gets Marvin Harrison, and it's about what impact he's going to make right now. And I just don't feel that way about the Browns draft. And a lot of that is because they didn't have the first round pick.
But is that a bad thing necessarily? Because we've been in that boat many times, and that's not a fun cruise to be on, where you're not a great team and you're relying on these guys to come in right away. Maybe this is a sign that their roster is deeper and they're a better team, so they don't necessarily need that impact guy. Not that you don't want one, but they don't have to rely on one.
No, that's a great point, Chud. And yeah, and I think that's a huge factor in this, and it's a huge factor in why Andrew Berry didn't make any trades, probably, right? Because there was no need to force anything. You can sit where you are and draft the best guy at that spot. Right now, at 54, when they take Mike Hall Jr., there was a run on pass rushing defensive tackles. So I think the Browns wanted to get in on that. They didn't want to wait. So they took him there. So there's a little of, you know, not that they needed a defensive tackle, but they wanted to get younger there. I thought they could use an influx of young talent on both interiors of the line, and that's what they did with their first two picks. So it's not all about ignoring the current state of the roster, but having a deep, strong roster where you feel like you have all 22 starters in place, it really does affect how you approach the draft. So, yeah, I don't think it's a bad thing at all. I'm just saying, as I sit there and watched it and processed it, that's what I kept thinking about was, okay, it's not – like, I don't – like, my prediction for the Browns' 2024 record didn't change at all based on the draft, right? And I think that's probably an unusual circumstance for the Browns and even across the league.
They wanted to make a trade, though. They wanted to. It's in their DNA.
It is. And, you know, Andrew Berry, he decided, because he could have moved back into the fourth round. He could have traded 54, picked up at least another pick, and been in the fourth round, because they didn't have a fourth rounder. They wound up not making a fourth round pick. But that run of defensive tackles, they liked Hall. They thought they were better off sitting there. And then once you got to the day three without a fourth round pick, it made it harder to trade, because that's a lot of teams, I think, were trying to get into that fourth round. And without the pick, the Browns just didn't have what anybody else wanted.
Yeah. Just quickly, yes, sir, were you surprised they didn't make a trade?
Yeah, just because he always does. He's aggressive and he likes it. Like, I think Andrew Berry likes making trades. And if you look at two of the GMs he's closest to in the league, Kwesi Adofo-Mensah, who was under Berry in Cleveland for a little bit, now he's a GM of the Vikings. He was moving all over that draft board. We saw it in the first round, and wound up trading a bunch. I think he traded away a bunch of picks in this draft and even next year's draft. And then Howie Roseman, who, when Berry left, right, Berry was here under Sashi Brown, left, went to Philly, came back to be GM. So he considers Howie Roseman a friend, a mentor. Roseman made like nine trades. The Eagles made like nine trades. And so I think he watched those two guys moving around and probably felt a little jealous.
Yeah. Let's see. What was your biggest surprise? Would you say you were pretty hardcore on thinking they would draft a tight end?
Chud, you listen to me when I talk, because that's exactly what I was going to say was my biggest surprise, is I thought they would take a tight end. And maybe they would have if they had picked up that fourth round pick. I mentioned that Watson trade. In the last pick of, right, the Browns gave 6 to Houston and got one back when they made that trade for Watson in 2022. And the last of those picks was number 123 in the fourth round. And the Texans had traded away and then got it back. And they traded, or they drafted, Ohio State tight end Cade Stover. And I thought he'd be a good pick for the Browns. We talked about that last week. So I think that was the area, that fourth round, where some of the tight ends that people wanted went. And the Browns didn't have a pick there. And I think when that didn't happen, then they were kind of resigned to not drafting a tight end. But that did surprise me, because if we talk about holes on this roster, to me, that's the number one hole, is the number two tight end. Maybe they think Jordan Akins can fill that. He didn't do a lot last year in his first year here, but there was Harrison Bryant was here. So maybe Akins with more playing time will fill that role. They signed Giovanni Ricci in free agency, but he's always been more of a blocker, special teamer. Maybe they think he can change. And then they have, I don't want to butcher his name because he's a three-name guy. I'm going to look it up real quick so I don't screw it up. But they've had a tight end. He's been on the practice squad the last couple of years. And actually, I saw a reasonable jump with him last year, Chud, in practice. He didn't catch the ball well in previous times when I'd seen him, and I thought he got better at it. Zaire Mitchell-Payton. I always call him Mitchell Zaire. Zaire Mitchell-Payton, 6'5", 257, a big dude. Maybe they feel he's ready to take a step up, but I still think they need it feels like there's a hole at that second tight end spot, and I thought they might try to address that during the draft.
So before we break down the guys, I will say this. Barry said, you know, as far as – I can't remember what the question was, but it came with the topic of they're not done yet. I mean, obviously they're done drafting, but the topic was brought up about the moves they made in May last year, remember, and things that – so do you feel like there's more work to be done by Barry?
Yeah, I do. Part of that's just his standard answer is that the roster's never set, right? I mean, he'll cite Joe Flacco last year, right, to get him in November. But there is truth to it. And I do think that they're never comfortable with the roster. And, you know, they're always looking to improve it. But having those examples from the past, I think are relevant. And, you know, they got Za'Darius Smith. It was either May or June last year. Shelby Harris was August. Rodney McLeod was May or June last year. So they've shown the willingness and the capability to add guys that turn out to be significant contributors after the beginning of free agency, after the draft, and I'm sure they'll continue to do that. And now the roster feels like it's better this year than even before last year, right? They had holes at defensive end. They had a hole at – they didn't, I don't know if they had a hole, but they felt like they could get better at defensive end, defensive tackle. You know, this year there's a lot less of those. I think there's fewer of those, but like we talked about, tight end could be one. Running back, depending on how Nick Chubb comes along over the next couple of months, could they be forced to add another running back? Though to me, those seem like the two most obvious positions to watch. And then maybe offensive tackle, depending on the health of, you know, Wills, Jones, and Conklin. They think all three are going to be fine, but let's say if Jack Conklin's rehab doesn't go as planned, could they add another veteran tackle? They have a couple on the roster, but maybe that's a spot where they could also beef up the roster.
All right, let's go to their first pick, which was 54 there in the second round. And listen, I think you called it last week. You said defensive lineman, right? I mean, I know you had a different player pegged, but you right. said it would be a home run, right, if they got a defensive lineman. You got it.
Yeah, and it's weird because I talked about how it's not all about needs, right? And it is about the future. But it just felt to me, and it played out that way, the defensive tackle made sense. It felt like that was the area of the draft around 54 where you would see defensive tackles coming off the board that were good players, not elite players, right? Not first rounders, but guys with potential, guys with talent. And I thought that the Browns wanted to get younger at that spot. Outside of Siaki Ika, last year's third-round pick, everybody else is older at that position. we're talking 28, 30, 31, 32, or I think those are the ages of, you know, Maurice Hurst the second, Dalvin Tomlinson, Shelby Harris, Quentin Jefferson, right? They're all 28 plus. Hurst is the only guy under 30. So that's an important position. As the Browns stressed, Catherine Raich, one of the assistant GMs, really stressed that the interior defensive line, especially one who can pass rush, the value of that is going through the roof. And we saw it 2 years ago in free agency 2023 with Javon Hargraves, right? His salary went through the roof. The Browns had to get out of there, and they wound up signing Dalvin Tomlinson to good money. This year, Christian Wilkins, the Browns were interested in him, and his contract went through the roof. So if you can get a guy on a cheap rookie contract and can do some of those same things, you're saving yourself a ton of money. And that's why I thought they would target defensive tackle, and then they did target defensive tackle.
So what do you think of Hall Jr.? I mean, Ohio State guy, you got to like that. I mean, I think that's something fans, you mentioned earlier, get excited about. But, I mean, Ohio State players typically do well in the NFL. I don't have any numbers next to me to back that up or anything, but, I mean, it's –
Well, we know they do, yeah.
Well, we know they do, right? Yeah. And then I think Barry said he's tailor-made for their attack up front. So, I mean, do you like this pick?
I do. The only knock on Hall would be he didn't have a bunch of production. I think he had 1.5 sacks in his last year there, 2 tackles for loss. But if you watch his highlight film, he's in the backfield. He's making plays. It looks like he plays. It's a highlight film, so I'm not breaking down every snap. But it looks like he plays with a high motor. So I think there's a lot to like there. He does have that explosion, that disruption in the middle of the pocket. So, yeah, he's got long arms, which it helps. It helps to break – to bat passes. It helps to disengage from offensive linemen. It helps to swing moves. So I really think – I think there's a lot to like about Hall. I do.
Let's go to Zinter now. And Scott, if he doesn't get injured, and for those who are listening, I would imagine most people who are listening know, but just in case, that's what we're here for. He had that big injury against Michigan.
Against Ohio State, yeah.
Or again, he's on Michigan against Ohio State. And it was with Hall, right? Was Hall part of that injury?
Yeah, they were both engaged with other linemen blocking or trying to get off a block. And I think it was the center for Michigan kind of throws Hall down, and he just falls into the left leg of Zinter, breaks 2 bones. So Zinter was done for the game, has to get carted off, misses the Big Ten championship, misses Michigan's 2 playoff wins to get to the, you know, to win their national championship. You know, and he said he was lucky because there were no ligaments, no tendons involved. It was just 2 broken bones. But it was gross. He said his leg was kind of pointing a different wrong direction, and the doctor came out and he fixed, like, he kind of, I don't know, popped it back into place kind of thing. So he could feel the bones kind of crinkling in there. So it's kind of nasty. Yeah. But he said it was the best worst case scenario because he missed all that stuff, but it wasn't ligaments. He could recover. He says he's going to – the Browns have rookie minicamp. It starts like May 10th. He says he's going to be on the field. So he's back. Maybe it hurt his draft stock a little bit just because he wasn't able to work out at the combine, wasn't able to go to the pro day, but probably not a ton given the fact that, you know, he's going to be ready to go in rookie minicamp. But, yeah, so a big injury, you know, obviously personally it affected him. He says that even the time away, you know, made him appreciate football more because he missed this, right? And he's been in football so long, you take it away for a couple months, and it rekindles a love kind of thing. But he's a, you know, he says he's the Midwest guy, even though, you know, he's born in Florida and then grew up in the outside of Boston. But calls himself a Midwest guy, you know, Hunter or Fisher, all that kind of thing. Big dude, he's 6'6". The Browns love him as a pass protector. And, you know, going back to that future thing, he theoretically gets to sit behind Betonio and Teller and learn a lot from 2 multi-time Pro Bowlers.
Sounds a little bit like Joe Thomas.
Yeah, right. Right. And somebody said that to me. You got to connect with Joe Thomas to go hunting and fishing. Yeah.
No, did they? Did someone say that?
Yeah, somebody said that.
Oh, that's fine. I did not hear his press conference. That's great. That's funny. Well, you know, it's a lot of what you just said, I was going to kind of follow up with, but I'll follow up again. So you don't think that he would have gone earlier? Had he not suffered the injury? I mean, maybe a higher pick, maybe even the second round.
Yeah, it's interesting, Chad. I mean, I'm not ruling it out. I think it's fair to say he could have gone earlier, and maybe even would have gone earlier. I don't, you know, he wasn't a first round pick, right? He went in the third round. Could he have gone in the second round? Maybe. You know, there's probably some trepidation if you're an NFL team and you don't get to see the guy work out, and it feels like a significant injury, right? But it winds up only being those broken bones. So I don't know. I wouldn't rule it out. I just think the fact that he's going to be back on the field this week, and teams, here's where you're probably right, is I think he said it was within the last 2 weeks, he sent video to teams of him working out on his own. So if you're putting your draft board together and you don't get that video that kind of, let's say, eases your mind, if you don't get that video till the middle of April, maybe that board's set. And you figure, hey, let's just leave this guy there. We're not going to bump him back up because he's probably had been knocked down a little bit. So you're probably right about that. And maybe the Browns benefited. You know, it turns out they benefited from a broken leg by the fact that he's still hanging around at number 85.
Yeah, I just think about a guy who, I mean, playing in that program with the success they've had the last few years and being on that offensive line. I was kind of excited about this pick. You know, I think people kind of get past that, I would hope, but I know sometimes you're like, oh, Michigan guy, but I think that's kind of an exciting pick. I know offensive linemen aren't exciting necessarily, but I think this could be if he is healthy, this could be a pretty darn good future pick to get him where they got him. And I'm going to be interested to follow this guy's future down the line. This could be a really outstanding pick by them. So we'll see. On the same side, man, what a bummer to suffer that injury in the game, right, and then not be able to be part of the rest of what they were able to do on the field. I got to believe that's going to drive him. I just, you know, I don't know him personally. Again, I didn't hear his presser, but I got to think if you missed out on all that stuff, there's something that I think would, you know, he's going to fight even more, if that makes sense.
Oh, I completely agree. And, you know, I don't know him real well. I talked to him on, you know, we had a conference call and we met him in person and talked to him again on Saturday, but that's certainly the opinion I have him, right? Like, I have no doubt that that's going to motivate him, that has rekindled that fire inside of him. I think the Browns got a good pick. You know, it's hard to draft guards super high, right? Just because they're not as valuable as tackles, so, you know, yada, yada. But that's a great spot to draft a guard. I think when you draft a guard in the third round, you think eventually he's going to be the starter, and he can be a long-term starter. I mean, Wyatt Teller was a fifth rounder in Buffalo. There's tons of examples like that across the league. So, you know, I think he's the future at one of those guard spots. And I played mostly, it was almost all right guard at Michigan, but, you know, I'm sure he'll work on both sides, you know, once they get him here. And that's how it works in the league, right? There are so many backups. You got to be able to back up both sides. You can't just have a backup right guard, backup left guard. He said he worked a lot at center, even though he didn't play in a game at center at Michigan. He worked a lot at center. So I'm sure he'll work at that, and maybe he'll be the number one interior backup this year. And then when you look down the road, Chud, you know, Wyatt Teller and Bitonio are both signed through 2025 on big contracts with big cap numbers, where if they got cut, let's just say they're not going to cut Joe Bitonio, but let's just say if they got cut or traded or whatever, after 2024, there would be a big dead cap number. And not that you couldn't absorb it, but my point is, it feels like the fastest path without an injury, the fastest path for Zinter to get on the field would be at center in 2025. The Browns could probably move on from Posick and then let him start at center for a year and then decide if he's a center or when Bitonio retires or Teller's contract runs out, then maybe shift him to guard. You know, I don't know if you want to, again, there could be injuries. There could be a million things happen. But if Teller and Bitonio continue to play at high level, I don't know if the Browns go, hey, let's keep this guy sidelined for 2 years. There might be the quickest road might be at center in 2025.
Did you bring up Steve Everett by chance?
I did not. Oh, I didn't even think about that, Chud. Yeah, former Michigan center. Yeah.
So I got to bring this up because a buddy of mine and a big fan of the podcast, by the way, he listens all the time, so I know he'll be listening to this. He sent me a tweet that he saw, and I can only assume that this is correct. I didn't research it, but he sent me a picture of Steve Everett. He goes, last time the Browns drafted an O-line offensive lineman from Michigan, he became a legend. The great at Steve Everett was fined $5,000 per game for wearing his Browns bandana under his Ravens helmet after Modell moved the team.
That's true. That's true. I don't know about I don't know if he's the last offensive lineman drafted from Michigan. As far as I know, as far as I remember, he is. But that part about the bandana is true. Yeah, he is a legend, yep. Steve Everett. Wow.
And isn't he?
That's a great treat. Thanks from your buddy. It has me thinking about that whole Michigan Ohio State thing, Chud. And you're right. Some fans don't let go of the Michigan factor, right? And I thought it stuck with Braylon Edwards when he was here.
Yeah.
And it sticks when you struggle, right? If you're playing great, nobody cares. If you struggle, then it comes back up. I remember talking to Jabril Peppers. He said he was getting death threats in, I think he said death threats, like at CVS because he went to Michigan, right? In Cleveland, like people were still caught on the Michigan thing. So you have that aspect to it. And I think probably for an offensive lineman, it disappears. And it, of course, if he plays well, it dissipates. But, you know, you have the Hall Zinter, and it's their first two picks in both sides of the rivalry, called themselves enemies. Then you throw in just the accidental fate part of Hall being the one that breaks Zinter's leg. Right, there were some connections there. And then to see them sit next to each other behind the microphone Saturday, calling each other brothers. You know, they're brothers now, they're teammates. They're doing social media videos together. It was an interesting dynamic to the draft.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, listen, if these guys who played against each other, they play with each other in the NFL. I mean, let it go. I get the rivalries and all that. And, you know, I understand you'd rather have a Buckeye than a Wolverine. But, hey, let's go. Let's just try to get the Browns to the Super Bowl. But I'm not going to put you on the spot, and I'm going to answer it too. Quickly here, we don't need to analyze it.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, when it's all said and done, who do you think is going to be the better pick, the better Cleveland Brown? Who will have a better history with the Browns, Hall Jr. or Zinter?
Yeah, that's a good question. I'll go Zinter because I think – not it's easier to be good at guard, but it's easier to be good at guard.
Yeah, I'm going Zinter too. That's exactly right. I am. Scott, you know, I don't buy jerseys with last names on them, but I might change my mind. I think I'm going to go out and get a Jamari Thrash jersey.
Yeah, that's a good name.
Right? Why not?
Right.
I mean, what do we think about this? I mean, the team just struggles to draft wide receivers. And here we go again. They're going to try to get one. I don't know how far they think he can go.
Yeah, it's interesting, Chud, because my first thought is when you draft another receiver, it's, hey, it's such an important position. We know that these draft classes nowadays are stocked with receivers. So it makes sense to draft. To me, it makes sense to draft one a year. Having said that, the reason you probably need to keep drafting them is because the ones you have haven't worked out, right? Anthony Schwartz is no longer here. David Bell, you know, after 2 years, feels like just a guy, right? Michael Woods, a second, didn't do anything, is a rookie, missed all of last year with an Achilles injury, was suspended by the league for, I still don't know what he was suspended for, but he was suspended for 6 games. I think it was a conduct issue. He'll be back this year, but you know, Cedric Tillman showed flashes last year as a rookie, but the jury's still out on him. So they haven't had a huge hit, right? Probably the best hit they had was Donovan Peoples-Jones, who they traded at the deadline last year. So I understand why they keep drafting him, but they need to get better, right? Like they need to get better at drafting these guys because their top three on the depth chart, Cooper, Judy, and Amore, were all traded, right? They were all they all came via trades after they had shown and after they played in the league, right? So if Thrash adds to that group, you know, I don't think it's a guarantee he makes the roster. He's in that competition with Bell and Woods and Jalen Darden and James Proche II. Now, having said that, Steve Smith Sr., the former Pro Bowl receiver, does a podcast or YouTube show, and he broke down all the draft receivers, all the top guys, and he loved Thrash. And he talked about how smooth he was, how good a route runner he was, the ability to separate, which is something the Browns personnel people said over and over when we talked about Thrash on Saturday. And I watched his highlight film, and he played 4 years at Georgia State, put up big numbers, transferred to Louisville, put up big numbers again in 2023. So he made the step up to, you know, big time ACC football. There's a lot to like. He's not a crazy fast guy, but he ran a 4.46, which is a good time. He's not the biggest guy in the world, but he does create separation. You're talking about route running. That's what Amari Cooper does well. That's what Jerry Jeudy does well. You get this group of route runners that can create separation on their own. I like that trait in receivers, and I think Thrash fits in. I would expect him to make this roster. Obviously, I haven't even seen him practice yet, but I think he's a guy with some upside, even though he doesn't – there's nothing about him that blows you away, you know, from a size-speed standpoint. I think he just does a lot of things well, and he had some drops, but he also played through a broken hand, which I think it's to his credit that he played through the broken hand. And he doesn't look like he fights the ball. I guess he had – I understand that he had these drops, but he looks like a pretty smooth catcher to me.
I got to tell you, you got me excited about Thrash here. I was already going to buy his jersey just because of his name. But now you got me fired up about this guy. I mean, I'm not going to lie. I didn't do a lot of research on him, and you just got me fired up.
Well, good. I'm glad I could help.
Yeah, well, you just got the rest of the Browns fans fired up too. One thing I found interesting, I don't know how much you want to break down these last three guys. I'm going to let you decide on that. But the one thing I did find interesting was the subject brought up about Barry and everyone there in the front office, these new special teams rules playing a factor with how they drafted guys later on. I found that very fascinating.
Yeah, it is interesting, right? And we still don't know exactly how that rule is going to play out. But it feels like it's going to be more of a scrimmage play because the return team and the coverage team, almost all the guys, not everybody, but almost all the guys, right? Not the kicker, not the returners, are going to line up 5 yards away from each other. So, you know, as opposed to normal kickoffs and punt coverage the kickoff coverage, where you had guys running 50 yards downfield and then you had blockers running, right? Like, it was more about space. It feels like the new kickoff rules are going to make it less about space and more about it's going to look more like a normal play, a normal scrimmage play. And can you get off a block, right? Can you sustain a block? So, we don't know how it's going to look yet, but could we see offensive linemen on kickoff returns? Maybe. I think we'll certainly see a lot of tight ends. I think you see a lot of linebackers on both sides, coverage and returning, because linebackers have shown that they can get off blocks, right? That's what they do. And I think that plays into their pick, Nathaniel Watson, the sixth rounder out of Mississippi State. I expect him to have a huge role on special teams right away. And he was highly productive in the SEC. Led the SEC with 137 tackles last year, tied for the lead with 10 sacks. Big body guy. The Browns see him as kind of a replacement for Sione Takitaki, who left in free agency, went to New England, and started as a strong side linebacker, showed he could play in the middle linebacker. And they think Watson has that kind of ability. They talked about his football intelligence. He's got a master's degree, so it's not just football intelligence. Barry said they can picture him being the defensive signal caller down the road. And that's kind of – I think that's high praise for a guy that you just drafted. So tying it all back in, I when you draft him in the sixth round, I think you can pencil him in as a special teamer right now. And he's a bigger body. And I think we we saw even when they took Miles Harden in the seventh round, he's kind of a nickel corner that could be valuable in those same special teams ways, those same special teams units. So, and Barry admitted it, that that was a factor in how they looked at some of these draft picks.
Yeah, and that's a great way to analyze these guys. And when I was kind of half-joking earlier when I said that, I mean, the seventh-round picks, sometimes you just don't hear much about them. And
sure.
I think my point was more so these guys can make the team and be productive. It's just you're not looking at guys here that are going to be, you know, you're most likely, right? You're big-name guys that are going to make a huge impact elsewhere.
No, of course not. No, you're exactly right. And, I mean, you know, I think – and we have to, again, this is way early, but like Watson seems like a guy, Nathaniel Watson, that could step in and have a role right away. And I mentioned on special teams, even perhaps on defense, right? Like the Browns have Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah, like he's their number one linebacker. They signed Jordan Hicks in free agency, veteran guy, played a ton. He's your number two linebacker. And then it's a little bit up for grabs. Judd, they signed Devin Bush. But he's been kind of a disappointment after an injury. He was a former first-round pick of the Steelers, had an injury, played in Seattle last year, didn't do a ton. So you got Bush, you got Tony Fields a second, you got Watson, right? Like, I don't know if you got Mamu Diabate, an undrafted rookie a year ago. Like, there's guys competing for playing time in that third linebacker spot. Now, they don't play that guy a ton, but when they go base defense, it's the third linebacker. Like, I don't think it's out of the question to think Watson could fit in that role. Talk about his size, the ability to play a strong side spot. But everybody else, you look at, you know, Miles Harden. I mean, he could be a practice squad guy. Their last pick, Juwan Briggs. He's a defensive tackle out of Cincinnati. He could be a practice squad guy, right? Like, Thrash could even turn into be a practice squad guy. So, once you get there with the state of the roster, you just never know. But if you do make it on the roster, then you better make a contribution on special teams for sure.
You think you're ever going to head over to a media session or practice and they're going to be like, hey, Watson's talking today.
Oh.
And then it's going to be Nathaniel.
I know. It's tough. I got to remember, right? Like every time you write it, you can't just go Watson. You know, if you mention both of them, right, you got to be careful with that. I know. Two Watsons. You got to keep an eye on that.
Just getting you prepared.
You got 2 miles. You know, Miles Garrett, Miles Harden.
Good point. I didn't think about that one. Well, you're on top of it, Scott. It's good to see you're on your A game.
Thanks, buddy.
All right, last question for me anyway is bottom line, do you think they made the best decisions?
Yeah, I would say overall. I would. There's not a pick that, you know, I looked at and I was like, oh, that's a terrible pick. You know, did they need a second defensive tackle? Probably not, but you're drafting it. I think Briggs was at number 243rd pick, right? Like, you're looking for something you like. You're looking for an important position. So, yeah, I can't quibble with any of these, Chud. I really can't.
All right. And notice I'm not going to ask you to give a grade. We're not going to do that.
Thanks, bud.
Thanks, bud.
I know. All that's right. Hard, right? It's always hard. I think it's even more difficult, would be more difficult this year, out of first-round pick, building for the future, all those things we talked about.
Yeah.
It's probably silly to give a pick.
How much – one? I will ask you one more. How do you feel about the other teams in the North? Yeah. How do you feel they did? And, you know, what concerns should Browns fans have on the other three teams?
Doesn't it always feel like the North drafts well?
Yeah.
The outside of Brotherly, it does. And – I tend to go to Baltimore because Baltimore doesn't trade up very often. They sit or they trade down, and a big-time player almost always seems to fall to them. And I liked what they did this year, right? They sat in Nate Wiggins, the corner out of Clemson, fell to them. They needed to get better. They needed to get younger at corner. I thought we saw some age there last year, and they drafted a couple corners, and Wiggins is the first one. So I liked what they did. Pittsburgh went, like, all offensive line. And then they drafted Roman Wilson, the receiver out of Michigan, who I like. I thought they might go receiver higher, but instead they went line, and then went and got a receiver. You know, the Steelers are good, Judd, and I think they've had a really good offseason. They've almost transformed that entire line recently, which had been a problem for them for years, which is un-Steeler-like, right, for the line to be an issue. So they devoted a bunch of resources. You know they're going to run the ball with new coordinator Arthur Smith. So, and then Cincinnati, you know, they drafted a tackle. They already have a couple, but they wanted to upgrade there, you know, protect Joe Burrow. I think there's more questions about Cincinnati's draft, but I really liked what Pittsburgh and Baltimore did, especially early.
All right, well, that's it for me. You got anything else?
No, I think we're good, buddy. We wrapped up a draft. Yeah, and then we have the next – I'm just thinking, the next thing up on the calendar is rookie mini camp. It's Mother's Day weekend. So, you know, who knows? We could have some news before then, but that's the next thing. And then after that, it's you move into OTAs and then get, you know, we get to see some Browns on the practice field. So that'll be fun.
So that's May. So that's not this weekend, but the next weekend.
Yeah, it's Friday, Saturday. Yeah, 10th and 11th, I think.
So do we get next week off? Or
I'm not prepared to say that, Chuck.
All right, okay.
I know. Right. I started, like, that's where I could tell you knew where that I was going, and I'm you thought that's where I was going. Right. I'm not going there. I'm just setting the calendar, but there's all a right. chance. I'll leave it open. There's a chance. We'll see if they make any news between now and then.
All right. I'm sure we'll be talking next week.
That's why you're the best.
Always in Brownstown. You got to be prepared, right?
Exactly.
Right. It won't be long until we're doing the schedule show, the schedule pod.
Yeah, and actually, we don't even know when that could come. It's all I say is May. So yeah. May starts this week. So that could be next week, Chad. We might have to do that. Might be the next podcast is the schedule.
May 1st is tomorrow.
We're taking this right?
on Wednesdays.
And I didn't then, even know that, but yeah.
Yeah, well, there it is. Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean it won't be this week, right? Like we would probably know by now if it was gonna be this week. But yeah. May 9th is certainly in play for the schedule release.
I think if we Googled it. I haven't, but I think there's got to be something out there that says, because remember, you know what they're going to do? They're going to come out and tell you a couple games one day, right? Don't things leak? Like, if memory serves correct, like the Thursday night game to open the season, we'll find out about that like early on.
Yeah, and they'll do the international games, right? Those usually come out early. We can find out if the Browns are going to play Jacksonville in London. But yeah, so that could happen as early as next week, Chuck.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. I was just going to Google here NFL schedule release date and see if anything pops up, because even if it's last year, you can have I think it was definitely May, because I feel like June, it's
oh no, it's May for sure. Yeah,
it's May for sure.
Yeah,
I just didn't know if they had there was a date out there, but all right, well.
No, I mean, all the like during the draft, they just kept saying May. Like, that was all – that was as specific as they got. So,
how about
what
this?
What do you got?
If this is accurate, this is exactly why I did this, and we just gave people boring pod seconds there. Yeah. But, all right, 2019 – it says 2023, May 11th. 2022, May 12th. 2021, May 12th. 2020, May 7th.
All right.
Here's a look at the past five schedule release. That, you know, that's if this is accurate. I don't know. I didn't have time to verify that.
I mean, that's probably true. So we're talking within the next 2 weeks, right? I don't think it'll be this week, next week or the week after. Yep.
Yeah. Yep. There you go. That's always a fun time.
Yeah. We got that to look forward to.
All right.
All right. Thanks, Chad. I appreciate it, bud. As always, you go take your nap. Thank you, everybody, for listening. This has been another episode of the Zone Coverage Podcast, and you can read all my work at brownzone.com. Thanks.